Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to this episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Thank you for listening and your continued feedback. If you have suggestions or you want me to dig in with a specific guest, please write to me at shubhanjan@pitch.link or message me on LinkedIn. Both links available in the show notes. I'm very excited to introduce you to our guest today, Sridhar Ranganathan, founder of B2 Brain.
If you are selling to enterprises, particularly in vertical markets, you needed to have good context of what's going on in those companies, and therefore you needed to do good quality account research. So B2 Brain's first focus was to automate account research for companies and generate insights specific to the business or the products and solutions you are selling. So if you are selling, say, ERP to pharma, the nature of problems in each company in the pharma industry would be different. And therefore, you want to position your ERP according to the nature of the problems. Okay, but if you're selling to manufacturing, the space of the problems that they face in their world could be very different. Right? So instead of going and talking your boilerplate sales pitch, you tailored and customized your pitch to the context of what's happening in the company. That was the core of the B2 Brain idea.
Sridhar believes that B2B businesses thrive on human connection. His startup, B2 Brain, enables exhibitors at events and trade shows to generate high-quality pipeline and better ROI by providing them a way to capture, analyze, and engage leads. Having done stints in product leadership at InMobi, Yahoo, and Zoho, Sridhar strives to understand user behavior and incentives at a fundamental level and architect the product experience based on these insights. B2 Brain is used by companies in vertical markets such as Zetwerk and Appify to amplify their GTM efforts and get more value out of events and trade shows. Now, on to this enriching session with Sridhar Ranganathan. Sridhar, finally, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast.
Thank you, Shubhanjan. Great to join you here.
Thanks for joining and for making time on a Saturday. Sridhar, I know when you started B2 Brain. I mean, I'm aware and I know what was your thought and how you built the product around that thought. However, over the last about 18 months, it seems to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you have pivoted with a full focus on the trade show and events industry. What made you do this? So tell me about what made you build B2 Brain and then what made you pivot?
So the big problem or the opportunity that we saw was the fact that if you are selling to enterprises, particularly in vertical markets, you needed to have good context of what's going on in those companies, and therefore you needed to do good quality account research, right? So B2 Brain's first focus was to automate account research for companies and generate insights specific to the business or the products and solutions you are selling, right? So if you are selling, say, ERP to pharma, the nature of problems in each company in the pharma industry would be different. And therefore, you want to position your ERP according to the nature of the problems. Okay, but if you're selling to manufacturing, the space of the problems that they face in their world could be very different. Right? So instead of going and talking your boilerplate sales pitch, you tailored and customized your pitch to the context of what's happening in the company. That was the core of the B2 Brain idea. Right? It would be your B2B brain that will work alongside you. What I noticed over the past 18 months, and you're right, that there's been an increased focus on trade shows and events, is the fact that if you are selling to a lot of the core industry verticals like manufacturing or energy or oil and gas or chemicals, the process industries, food, beverages and stuff, the nature of what we know as sales process is somewhat different, not the fundamentals, but the fact that you are selling more often than not to the business functions in those companies, the core business functions, the core operations functions in those companies, right? And in those cases, it is important to be able to meet the buyers where they are. Okay, those buyers are not necessarily the ones who are sitting online and searching for information to replace their ERP. Okay, you will have to go and talk to them, have a different level of conversation to help them understand what sort of problems they have to anticipate and solve for in the future. Okay, so that was the first part. The second part was that if you're selling to a lot of these verticals, your sales are like enterprise class sales. So you're selling, you know, multi-hundred-thousand-dollar, multi-million-dollar software and solutions and stuff. Predominantly, those tend to be a combination of hardware plus software. Quite often, what I'm seeing is it's a combination of hardware, software plus services. Okay, so it's not the SaaS sale that we have known in the traditional sense of the word.
Yeah.
Okay. It is a combination, which means you as a seller have to have a very wide expertise in what you're talking about to be able to talk their language. Okay. Or to be able to talk at a level that the buyer would engage at. Right. It is quite distinct from what we've seen in SaaS, right? Traditionally in SaaS. The thing that I noticed was that very often it is in these B2B trade shows and events where there seems to be a lot of in-person interaction towards making a deal. Okay. And that seems to be a place where, especially after COVID, since late 23, the presence and attendance at these shows has been steadily going up. Okay. And the quality of conversations are also much higher. Mm-hmm. Okay. Unlike typical, say, networking events and conferences, these shows tend to be focused on, can I learn more about what's there new in the market? Can I figure out what sort of solutions or a combination of them will solve some of the problems that I have? That's the mindset with which buyers come to these shows.
Right.
Sellers go to these shows to demonstrate what are the new capabilities that buyers would be interested in, and also learn what is it that they are missing from their repertoire, from their portfolio, which is necessary. So these shows serve as very high intensity, high frequency interaction points between buyers and sellers. And there's a lot of learning, osmosis, and promotion that takes place here.
Hmm.
Right? So our focus shifted to saying, if you are selling to all of these core industries, if you're selling to these vertical markets, if you're selling to their enterprises, okay, it is very interesting to see that these shows, trade shows and events are a big part of your marketing budget. Sometimes as high as 75%.
Hmm.
Okay. Because you're expecting the majority of your pipeline to be generated as an outcome of having met and shook hands with potential buyers. You're not even making a deal there. You're just getting a chance to meet them in person, shake hands, put a face to the name, not be in a situation like you and I, you know, across continents, we still meet on remote.
Right. Right.
Right. You want to meet in person, not by the riverside or not on Zoom.
Right.
Right. So yeah. That's literally what the sellers look at. And then given that context, they want to make sure they are present at some of the key shows that take place. A lot of these, like US alone, just this year has about 1,300 trade shows and events happening.
Yeah.
Right. Europe is another significantly large market. Sometimes people say it is 2 to 3 times larger than the US. Okay. So there could be multiple reasons for why those are. Europe is multicultural and, you know, multilingual, multi-ethnicity and all that stuff. So in-person interactions are a different, are necessity in Europe to do business there. So We're speaking with several companies in the US who have bigger trade show budgets allocated for Europe than in the US. Like they do three shows in the US and like eight or nine in Europe. Right. And each of them are significant investments if you think about it. Right. Right from renting the space and like everything else put together, it can be very significant. So we realized that if the exhibitors are spending so much investments on these trade shows and are looking to build pipeline, can we help them accelerate that process by providing them context, enabling them to never miss a single prospect interaction at the place, right? And enabling them to build a curated pipeline soon after the event. Okay, right. Because today, when you look at it from just event organizing, event management lens, right, the logistics, all of that is taken care of. Okay, and then the sales and marketing go present there, do the run the booth and stuff. We noticed a crucial gap between these, what happens at the event and the follow through in order for them to build a pipeline.
Yeah.
So that's the gap we have been addressing with B2Brain.
It's very interesting. I'll just sort of put in one thing. You know, the work that you do otherwise, I mean, in the sense that what you built B2Brain for, if you really think about it and you think of the discussion around this, the focus of GTM over the last, I would say 4 or 5 years has boiled down to intent.
Right.
Right. So we are all talking of signals and trying to find the intent and pretty much from the online activities that the company is doing, from the press releases they're doing, or the quarterly or monthly investor calls that they're doing, and so on. So we are basically trying to glean from this that this company is potentially going to invest in this area. So thereby, since I'm part of that area, so that's the broad thing. But like we know, a lot of them are not really signals, right? However, I strongly believe I'm just trying to sort of add to what you said. Trade shows are possibly the purest form of demonstration of intent, of wanting to engage of something in the near future. It may not be today. Unfortunately, a lot of our focus is to identify from the visitors who is going to buy today.
Right.
And that's really where it fails. We'll come to, when we talk about the ROI bit, we'll talk about that. But the fact is, nobody is going to, in many cases, pay registration fees. In many cases, I would say it's a 50-50 kind of split where 50% are free, 50% are not, and so on. Book a ticket, spend 3 days, walk the aisles. They're not coming there. I mean, no matter what you tell, they're not coming there for the concert. They're not coming there to meet only friends.
Okay.
I mean, those are bonuses. Of course, yes. They're great. If in the evening there is a lot of entertainment and noisy music and you can possibly shake a leg, great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. But that's not why they've come there for.
Right.
So, like you said, any other investment of this magnitude where you are really in front of people who have demonstrated their intent to be there and to walk into your booth and so on, not the ones where you give free swag and so people come and pick it up and go away. I mean, that's another problem. We can talk about that if you want. But genuine conversations, and we neither capture it properly nor follow up properly. You know, I was talking to Paul Woodward and then also Adam Perry, who runs a bunch of, he runs the events industry website, and he does a few event tech events based out of Manchester. 70%, I believe, and please tell me whether this resonates with you, 70% of exhibitors never follow up. Never, not even thank you for coming to the booth. I mean, it may be exaggerated. It may be like 60%, but would you? I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you hear any of that?
Yeah, there is it's actually a very very pertinent statistic, if you will. I was speaking with somebody and he mentioned this particular context. So the two things you said are very true. One is, if I'm taking a flight, going to a different place, spending 2-3 days, you know, I have enough expenses, like flight, Uber, both ways, right? And the stay and the food and whatever else. And that's twice over. So I'm spending on an average about $1,000 per show if I went, plus, you know, loss of 3 days of 3 or 4 days of productivity, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to, like, these shows are held with 1 day left in the week, which means you're basically discounting that week.
Yeah.
Okay. So a lot of productive work during that week that I would have done otherwise is not there. Okay. Instead, I'm expected to build pipeline or do something more useful, you know, because I'm going there. Okay. So that's one part. The second part was, so yes, if people are coming, it's a very, very great and high fidelity form of intent. Now, as you rightly said, you don't know whether they're going to buy today, they're going to buy next week, next month, but they're in some stage of, I want to learn more, I want to be aware of this.
Yes.
Okay. They're definitely in some stage, right? Okay. The swag and the parties are a bonus, but that's not the main course, right? You come for the steak. The sizzle is just attracting you. That's it. The second part about exhibitors, it couldn't be more true. Okay. And I was having a chat with this person and he was talking about, you know, exhibitors and their mindset and stuff. And it was very fascinating to listen to how the mind operates. Okay. When you're in the show, you are in that arena with a lot of excitement, high entropy, you know, a lot of action going on. So there's just a higher level of enthusiasm to do stuff. But pipeline building is a grind. It's a hustle. It's doing those repeatable jobs repeatedly that could be, you know, profoundly boring very quickly. Right? But it's just being persistent. Mm. Okay? It's very different in nature from, like, being at the arena, being at the show, you know, talking to a whole lot of people, shaking hands and having coffees and stuff. So what tends to happen is when you come out of the trade show bubble, you kind of get reset to the regular world, regular life, the 9-to-5 kid soccer games and whatnot, like traffic jam and everything else, that you give this a miss. The fact that you had great conversations, but those conversations really matter to you only when you follow up on them.
Yeah.
We know that in sales, money's in the follow-up.
Yeah.
Right. I was speaking with Mark Vandewoff and he said, you know, this very interesting thing. He runs a sustainable manufacturing community in the West Coast. And he said, speed to lead is the need.
Mm.
Right. So, in fact, you can go one step further and say that speed to lead repeatedly, persistently, right, consistently is really the thing that moves the needle.
Right. Right.
Okay. So I wouldn't disagree with those numbers. The numbers can go, you know, back and forth a little bit, but yeah, that's, and I've heard when we speak with companies and like we talk to them about how do you make sure that you're not missing the need to follow up with specific people.
Hmm.
For example, we had a customer exhibit recently at one of the recent shows, right? They had about 140 leads, visitors that they scanned. Okay. And at the end of the show, we ran this whole analysis report to find out of those 140, and they also could like make some notes at the end of the conversation saying, mm-hmm. this is what is the next step and stuff like that, right? How many were product inquiries? How many were demo requests? How many were, you know, asking for more information? Like how many were follow-up calls and all that stuff? And then, so you are now back in the office. Monday morning, what are you going to do? Okay, who are you going to talk to? In the first week, who do you need to kind of get back to? The next week, who do you need to get back to? Somebody's visiting. People also get on flights and go to places where they are on the road for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So you meet them on Thursday of your show. The next week, they're at the next show. Following up with them the next week is of practically no use.
Correct.
Right, because that mail will get lost in the pile of everything else that's coming.
Yeah.
Okay, but exactly following up with them the Tuesday after would make a huge difference. because they'll be back in office and like, you know, you would be in the top of the inbox. So very nifty, small things like this, oftentimes boring, but extremely high valued, are about as important as the 50K investment that you put in the show to send your team and put everything and exhibit there.
Right, right. So my question, and I'm no trade show veteran, right? So I don't know about you, but I mean, I've attended a bunch in my life, but I can't by any stretch say that I know it all, even remotely. So this has been on for ages. I mean, I had a chat with a gentleman called Enrico, and he's out of operates out of Dubai and runs a event related research consultancy, and he incidentally wrote a book on. So the point he was making is, event is something we are doing since the beginning of civilization. Okay,
right.
And he has a very cogent, very Yuval Noah Harari type of in a story. Okay, but the point is, why is event ROI still such a black box?
So first, I think is that how do you define ROI is not consistent, right? So in my previous job, I was at InMobi, okay, one of the biggest mobile advertising networks, right? And the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona is one of the most important events of the year for us.
Right.
Probably the biggest event for us, right? And naturally, we were in the mobile world. We were literally the forefront. We're talking early, you know, 2011, 2012 kind of time frame, like over a decade ago. And this was massive, okay? But the beautiful part for us was, I don't think, at least in the couple of Mobile World Congresses that I went to, we ever winged it. Prep would start 45 days ahead of time. Okay. We would, of course, book a booth, and like there's a whole marketing angle of setting up everything, making sure you are very nicely presenting yourself. Okay. We would be about 25 people strong, flying in from multiple regions, from Europe, from the US, from India, from Singapore, like a bunch of people there, right? And there was this extremely high degree of rigor about how to prepare for it. Everyone knew it's a four-day event. Everyone knew every half of the day what was their role. What did they have to do? Okay, we would not just have these booths. We would rent a couple of rooms in a hotel nearby where we would schedule meetings. And meetings were allocated on a 20 or 25-minute slot with 5 minutes for changeover. So you had to book a room, book a meeting slot, and make sure you're meeting the people you were meeting were there at that place at that time. So you had to work with their logistics. So it's an extremely intense exercise to do this. Okay. And equally well, at the end of the show, there would be these notes of what needs to be followed up on with who.
Right.
Right. So if you look at it as, okay, I'm sure back then the overall cost of doing such a scale of thing would have been about, say, a couple of $100,000. Okay. Now, we never looked at it as, hey, I'm spending 200K on MWC. We looked at it as, first 45 days we prepped. We've got 78 meetings, right? And we've got now 30 follow-ups, and we've got 6 deals. Each deal will be worth about 250K for the year. Okay, now you're talking $1.5 million.
Yeah.
So if you look at the event really as a process rather than as an event, like Kumar Vembu, my previous boss, used to say, okay, it's a fabulous return on investment. Okay, because you're not looking at it as, hey, I just blew up like 200K in 4 days. That's a very, very short-sighted way of looking at the thing, right? Now, not often do people think it's an ongoing thing. People think it's a blockbuster.
Yeah.
Okay. And in the war between Netflix and Blockbuster, you know what happened to Blockbuster. Right? So yeah. The smarter exhibitors think of it as it's part of an ongoing process. I was speaking with Gopal Krishna from Zetwork, and he was saying, event touch points, when I meet with customers and prospects at the events, in my ABM system, they are looked at as engagement minutes and touch points. So he's looking at event as a continuum of a series of touch points with prospects. Okay, so and he's leaving nothing to chance. Right? Yeah. He's not saying, like, you might open up a new account there. You might open up a conversation with a new account. Absolutely, yes, that's what you're there for. Okay? But you're also there to make sure that your prospects and buyers are continuing in their journey with you. Yeah. So you're not looking at the event as a one-off thing.
Right, right, right. This is such a powerful story. I think this could be the takeaway from this episode, that event is not an event, but a process. Yeah. Attributed to you. So
yeah, I will attribute to Kumar Vimbi.
Yeah, good one. So again, just staying with that idea that event ROI is possibly not defined properly. Who in an organization, see, we know that marketing and sales both work for an event, for a trade show participation, right? So marketing does certain amount of things. Sales does certain amount of things. There is a handover that, okay, now you guys run the booth and so on. And what I observe from my conversations, pretty much what, again, you can validate that or not, the same dysfunction that exists in actual B2B sales in everyday between marketing and sales just gets carried over here.
True.
Would you sort of agree with that?
It's the same people.
Exactly. Right. So. Which is why no wonder that the marketing will have a different set of ROIs to tell the management that we have executed well on this 200,000 or 50,000, whatever. And sales will have their own. And then there'll be things like, okay, they drove completely rubbish people to the booth.
Hmm.
What can I do? Whatever, right?
Hmm.
So why do you think, I mean, although in B2B sales, you see the shift towards a unified command under the CRO, yeah, right? So both marketing and sales reporting into the CRO, which means there is a process which is underway, yeah, very late, but underway, to see that this coordination is real and people have unified KPIs and so on. Is it simply the reflection of that and it's just going to catch up at some point, or is it something else?
Okay, it's a fairly loaded question, right? And I think there are going to be multiple shades of answer for this. Okay. For one, like I said earlier, it's the same set of people.
Right.
So you cannot be behaving differently just for like 20 days in a year and like behave another way for the rest of the year. Right? So how you kind of tend to interact in office, even virtually, remotely, etc., it'll be very, very overlapping with how you interact even in the context of an event. Okay, not going to be very different. Secondly, I think we have to respect the fact that there are different shades of companies, even in segments, right? So companies at like, you know, below 200, 250 people, yes, scale will behave differently from the ones who are like, say, 200 to 1,000. Will behave very differently from the ones who are from like 1,000 onwards, like really large-ish enterprises and mid-market companies and stuff, right? Because what tends to happen is that at smaller scale, marketing has a lot of role to play in making sure the event goes well.
Hmm.
Okay, as it gets larger and larger, marketing also starts distributing it to event management almost as a focused function.
Yeah.
Events and trade shows. There are companies that have directors of events and trade shows and stuff, right? Their job is to kind of do shows, like 15 shows a year. Okay. And those people become like the go-to people for the sales reps, because the sales reps have to be flying in for all of those events. Right. I was speaking with Chris Torrance at Optim a few days ago, and he was saying that, you know, I end up doing like 2 weeks on the road, 1 week at home. and 2 weeks on the road, 1 week at home. So that's about how much, especially during the season, March to June, I think there are 670 shows happening. Right. So practically every day there are multiple shows taking place. Okay. In fact, we have a founder who flew in from India to the US just this morning. He landed there and he was saying that he's attending 3 overlapping shows in Las Vegas in the coming week. Okay. One show a day. Right. So that's how much of action is taking place right now. It's like the Diwali or the Thanksgiving season for shows instead. Okay. Right. So that's one part. Now, if you think of how will the functions evolve, I think it's really dependent on the scale of the company and the nature of the sales process that they do. So I'll give you another example. I was at Automate in Chicago last year in May. Mm. Okay. I was speaking with this rep from a company that does robotic arms for food processing companies. Okay. Food businesses. And he said, look, we are 5 people. They're a startup. They're like a 60-odd people startup or something of that sort. Okay. We are 5 reps and, they have 2 branches, US and China or something of that sort. And we have 5 reps. There is an account book of 1,000 accounts that we have to go after. Okay. Each of us has been given 200. We have to make sure we can get 1 deal from them in the year, which will be between $1.4 to $1.7 million and a 3-year long contract. Okay. Now this rep talks to the events manager in the company to stay lockstep on which are the next events they have to go and present and showcase and stuff.
Hmm.
So it's almost like they've been, the 200 accounts are carved into your territories, right? You are taking P&W, you're taking East Coast, and you're taking Midwest, and you're taking the South, and all of that stuff. Now they work, each of them in their territories, they work closely with the event manager to say, look, these are the ones we should be there at.
Hmm.
Right? And they've kind of nailed the playbook to a T. What will you do at the event is nailed. Okay, so the event manager's job becomes, okay, fine, we're going for this event. I will take care of the logistics. I'll take care of setting up the booth and, getting the equipment there, all of that stuff. Because they know the nuts and bolts of how to get it up and running. And the rep focuses on making sure they are bringing the right people for the demo. And they both go and pitch to the marketing head and say, look, this is what we want to do. Right? Of course, the rep has to get sign off from the VP of sales on, okay, this is going to cost so much. So where's the budget going to come from? Okay. How much of it is yours? How much of it is mine? All of those questions need to be answered, right? So I think the way they tend to operate is going to be very company size and sales process dependent.
Right.
Okay. Because this rep's job is, look, there are going to be 7 shows this year that I want to be in my territory. Of these 7 shows, I will make sure that at least 120 out of the 200 accounts make a visit some point or the other. Because then the chances that I can get them moving forward in my pipeline is very high.
Right.
If they don't come, I have to do more efforts to do that. Right? So they are taking greater control of, okay, how do I make sure I am building my pipeline towards my goal?
Right.
Right? But if you look at an event as a centralized expense, okay, and everybody coming and doing their part and going and missing the bigger picture, then you need strong project management in order to actually be able to say that, okay, I actually got ROI. Because like I said, in the case of InMobi, there was very clear structure on, have you done your 11:40 to 11, 12:05 meeting at this place with this person, right? So if I'm going, even my flight tickets are booked based on the fact that I'm signing up for X meetings to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Forget flight tickets. Like, to get a ticket to MWC, you got to pay some, I think, $890 or something other per head. So it's no small money. And then the Europe, EU Schengen visas and the stay, I think hotels charge a bomb.
Yeah.
right? So it is massive expense. You either have great project management to tie in all these pieces together and, you know, make sure that there's a coordinated effort to deliver ROI, or you have individuals taking high degree of responsibility and showing high agency to make sure that they can make good value out of the event.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
And you, at that scale of the company, your product value proposition and the and what message you want to give per segment is also much more refined. Okay, so you can processize, you can systematize a lot of things. Therefore, marketing becomes the logical owner of all of those investments, spends those decisions on which shows to go, what sort of a booth to organize, and you know what sort of a presentation to give, and all of that stuff. Right? Marketing becomes the owner of that, because then sales can be more productive. They don't have to think about all these overheads.
You are listening to a Bizcast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode. So from the customers that you are dealing with now, obviously there will be part of the more thinking people who are going to willing to try new systems because they're concerned about the ROI. Where do you think is the ownership lying? Is it like a collective thing, or is it something that's lying with the marketing? Traditionally, I'm told that the event ROI and the budget both actually was with the marketing, except possibly the travel and stay of the salespeople. And in many cases, that was also part of the same budget. So what are you seeing actually in the ground today?
Yeah. In very small companies, like sub 100 people companies, it's often sales actually calling the shots.
Okay.
Okay. As it gets larger to, I would say, all the way to even up to 1,000, marketing takes it over. Because there are multiple salespeople. You can't afford too many salespeople calling the shots. It's a problem.
Yeah.
So you want to provide some guidelines and a framework in which they operate, right? And you, at that scale of the company, your product value proposition and the and what message you want to give per segment is also much more refined. Okay, so you can processize, you can systematize a lot of things. Therefore, marketing becomes the logical owner of all of those investments, spends those decisions on which shows to go, what sort of a booth to organize, and you know what sort of a presentation to give, and all of that stuff. Right? Marketing becomes the owner of that, because then sales can be more productive. They don't have to think about all these overheads. Okay, and marketing can play to its strengths, which is like systems, process, data, standardization, consistent messaging, right? Market segmentation, positioning, all of that are strengths of marketing, right? So that becomes commonplace. Now, if you go larger, okay, marketing ends up taking the support of some of the more recent ops functions like business operations, business finance, okay, sometimes even like the, what do I say, the founder's office, chief of staff kind of senior executive assistant people, right? Who can help you with a little bit of strategy and, you know, a whole bit of coordination and all that stuff. So, but even at that stage, marketing tends to be calling the shots on which event, what scale and size, okay, why we are going here, are we exhibiting or are we just walking the floor, right? Or are we just doing like a sidelines event? Okay. I think that's very important, right? For example, you know, if you look at companies like SpendFlow, okay, Divas, who runs marketing there, they're brilliant at running events. They know their audience. They understand their ICP very well, then they understand what do these ICP do and not do. So accordingly, they tailor what sort of events they go to, what sort of presence they want, right? How do they, you know, organize things? How do they bring them together? So, you know, what I've seen is that as you understand your audience a lot more, and given the scale and size of your business and the level of operations you have, the ownership tends to move away from sales as the company grows larger. It tends to be a lot more systematized and processized as marketing takes it over.
Right. But my question remains that are they actively thinking of ROI? I mean, do you hear what or how they're actually defining the ROI that they're trying to get out of the events that they're participating?
Yeah. The jury's out. Okay. There are more sophisticated. So I am in conversation with a few companies, some of whom are figuring out how should we structure or how should we even think about ROI. So we end up actually brainstorming saying, okay, what's the value to the business? Okay. And for that, I use a structure that Gopal was sharing with me some time ago. He said, you probably go to an event for three reasons. One is brand building.
Correct.
Two is pipeline generation. Three is getting into the network. Okay, being connected with and, you know, adequately, you know, involved in the market ecosystem that you play, right? So if you look at it that way, brand building is probably, it's fuzzy. Okay. You don't know whether you got ROI or not. Or you could always make an argument that you did, which is what people tend to do, right? And it's a very, very late payback. It's a very lagging indicator. Okay.
Yeah.
Pipeline, with reasonable sense, you know within the next 45 to 60 days whether you were able to generate pipeline.
Yeah.
Right. So by thinking of an event as a process, you reduce the angst to declare good or bad ROI 1 week after the show. Okay. Or at least make sure that, and also respect the fact that finishing the event and doing it well there is just not adequate. It's necessary, but it's absolutely not sufficient. It's basically at best 1/3 of the problem.
Yeah.
2/3 of the problem is like, you know, another 1/3 is before the event, what did you do? After the event, what have you done? Right? So often what tends to happen is when you think of event as a blockbuster, the 1/3 carries the weight of all the three. Okay, which is 3 times the pressure.
Yeah.
And therefore, higher expectations. And it's very hard to match up at 3x the expectations.
Yeah.
Right. So that problem always remains. And what I learned is that companies that are thinking events are important for my pipeline, you start from, like we did a brainstorm with one VP of marketing some time ago. And we said, okay, fine. What is the broad pipeline you expect as contributory from the 4 events you're going to do this year? And they came back and said 60%. What does 60% mean? X companies, Y dollars. Y dollars in opportunity. What does it mean? Let's break that down. Then we keep distilling down and saying, okay, fine. If I got 45 qualified meetings out of all these 4 events, that would get me 60% pipeline. Now we are talking real numbers. So 4 events, you know, 2 are happening in the first half of the year, 2 are happening in the second half of the year. So that means you want to be a little more front loaded because you got like a 4 to 6 month sales cycle. Right? So you want to aim for about 30 meetings at the first 2 events. If you need good quality 30 meetings from them of X people you meet at the booth, how many will turn into those meetings? Let's say 25%, right? So you need to meet 120 quality visitors. Now assume there is like a 1:1, you know, good to not so good visitor ratio. You're talking, you must be meeting 240 people in those 2 shows. First show, 3 days. Second show, 4 days. So in 7 days, you got to meet 240 people. That means you're talking of 35 people a day. right? Usually in a 3-day show, 2.5 days is what is effective. In a 4-day show, 3 days is what's effective. So in 5.5 days, you've got to meet, you know, 240 people. So you're actually aiming to meet about 50 people a day. How do you attract 50 people a day? Becomes your on-the-ground tactic that the event management team has to work towards, right? Are there potentially multiples of 50 people of your ICP in the show is what you need to do as pre-event research. Who are those accounts that you really want there? Do you need to bring them in? Has the organizer shared an attendee list of the accounts so that you know X of these accounts are coming? Right? So if you start looking at the structure of how you want to execute the event, then automatically it'll emerge that, look, in this event, if we got 30 good meetings, we hit our ROI. You now can present the story to your executive team and they'll understand. Your executive team is only going to look at what numbers did you generate out of this.
Yeah.
They don't care what flag you gave and what presentation you did, nothing, right? Where's my pipeline? And you can now set expectations saying, look, we are expecting 30 meetings out of this in the next 45 days after the event. That will come out of the fact that we would have met about 70, 80 good people in this event in 2.5 days, right? 70 would come out of like 150 people that are visitors. We have a plan for how to bring in 150. We have looked at the account list. There are at least 120 accounts that are good for us. And it makes sense for us to invest now. Right? Because your executive team is going to look at it and say, do you have a clear roadmap of how will you make good this 100K investment?
Yeah, absolutely. So my follow-up question is, see, if it's the industry where it has a flagship event happening, like in case of Mobile World Congress, like whoever is wherever, they come there. So even if I have as a company, say if I'm in Mobi, for instance, I know these are my accounts, I've mapped the accounts, I know that they're likely to come there. That's, however, doesn't work when I'm in a particular city where it's not necessary that my accounts are actually present in that city and it's unlikely that they'll visit that place. So my ability to mobilize is restricted in many parameters. However, what the organizer is able to offer me, which means they have registered data, that becomes very critical. Now, what I hear, and tell me if you're hearing the same thing, is that typically organizers are extremely reluctant to share attendee lists in advance. How much of it is true? Is it like, no, it's like maybe 20%, but balance 80% are very happy to give it? Or is it, no, this is primarily true. Some exceptions are there who do give it out. Because that becomes a key component. I was talking to, again, another company who are building a CRM sort of for trade shows and also talk about engagement and mostly email based, pre and post and so on. And I was having this chat with them that how can you, so if I have a list of attendees, there is a possibility, say for instance, by using B2Brain, I can zero in on the 500 people who are my ICP. And then start the mobilization from there and so on. So that's fine. But if I'm not getting any, there's only so much I can do. So the pre-event activation, which is so critical, actually, as you rightly said, is sort of dependent upon the organizer being either being part of that or sharing. What are you seeing at the ground?
So I would put it as in three buckets. Okay. There are some events where organizers share the attendee list to exhibitor. Because the purpose of that event is for organizer to bring the buyer and the sellers together.
Correct.
That's a stated purpose.
Correct.
So, you know, that's why each one is wanting to be there. Buyers are interested because they want to know what are the solutions and spend quality time with them.
Right.
Sellers want to know who is going to come so that they can decide who they have to send from their end. Right. So that's one bucket. The second bucket is, as the event gets larger, organizers, rightfully so, are also concerned about you know, will this list start getting floated in the market? Right? Naturally, because it just brings them a bad rap.
Yeah.
Okay. So what they end up doing, and they can't also not share some indicator of who's coming. Mm-hmm. How do you attract people? The exhibitors are the ones who are spending money to come there. So how do you attract them if you don't tell who's going to come? I can't keep that a secret. You can't keep that a secret. So they do limited exposure. By that, what I mean is they might say, here are the companies that are coming. Mm-hmm. This is an event about procurement. So you can decipher that people in the procurement function from these companies will be coming, which is not terribly hard today, right? It just takes work, okay? So they do limited exposure, okay? The third is, more often than not, if you have if the organizer has put out a mobile app for the event, invariably they publish the directory of whoever is attending. They just don't give it. It's only accessible to the people who have the mobile app and the login credentials for that event, right? It's a lot more work if you want to prospect them beforehand, or if you want to pre-book meetings, or if you want to engage with them pre-event, because you got to do it from the mobile app, like go one by one. And I think in business, just given the fact that it takes 3 to 6 to 12 months to close a deal, sometimes like as long as 1.5-2 years and stuff, it is just natural that, you know, if you are an exhibitor, you're paying money to be there at the event, you have an ability to actually reach out to these people and try and secure some conversations, something going on with them, right, beforehand, so that you have a semblance of how to engage with them at the event. Right, so it's these three buckets that I am seeing, at least from the inputs that I got from all the exhibitors. We only focus on exhibitors, right?
Sure.
So if you're a freeloader, you're just trying to kind of get into the event and do something about it. You are at the mercy of the public domain.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever's there, right? But as an exhibitor, I see these three shades. So I wouldn't think. But again, let's also be clear. Events like the Mobile World Congress or the CES and stuff, like where there are like thousands of people walking in.
Lakhs.
Okay. Yeah, lakhs. Yeah, exactly. CES, I think, had 101,000 footfall this year or some fairly large number, right?
CES
had, I think, about 3,000 plus exhibitors this year. So, right. Of course, 4 or 5 days, Las Vegas, anybody walks in, So, I think those are a different class of events, if you will.
Agreed.
Right? But in the interest of, so what is the event organizer's incentive to share or not to share? They want to share because they want to showcase that, look, I'm actually bringing in the right people that matter to you. So you will come back and exhibit with me next time as well. You use me as a channel. They want to be positioning this event as a channel. Right? That's an acquisition channel. What is the what are the downsides that they would consider before showing the information? What if you use this information offline and never came back and renewed with me? What's my value, repeat value to you next year as an exhibitor? Okay, that's one constraint. Second is, what if this information gets floated out in the public domain that it's almost, tantamount to breach of confidential data or breach of user privacy and so on? So there is a security and data privacy issue. And there is a threat to business model issue. And these are the two large issues they might consider before they to decide what level of fidelity of information they want to give to exhibitor.
Yeah, absolutely. I get that, and I understand that they will give you access, like the post that you had made, they will give you access to their database based on what you scanned, and they will give you whatever the attendee has filled up in their registration form or whatever. However, one possible solution that could come is that the organizer gets more organized with the data, and then as an exhibitor, I can say, okay, this is my ICP, and give me the list of people whom I should be actually talking to, the reason I'm coming there. right? So that has to be, so you're not giving it to the exhibitor to actually do that and so on. Like you said, don't expose limited. And I think the point of exposing the name of the companies is actually very good, very useful. And it can be actually very well harnessed with tools like B2Brain. Because you know your ICP, you know who is your buyer, you know that this kind of buyer is coming here. So if these companies are coming, it's likely that this person will be coming and so on. But I think the solution possibly resides at the organizer's doorstep, because I think that way, I mean, for all the reasons that you just said, why it is required and why they need to protect. And everybody told me who, I mean, whether I'm talking to somebody in UFI or IAE or whatever, that this is like their crown jewel. It's like protected with their life, which is fair. But what's unfair is that if the exhibitor is not able to leverage that, then what's the point?
Yeah.
So let's move into this last thing that I thought I should talk to you about. What do you see are the real... So ROI is a challenge. So that's a very big, high-level challenge, right? What else do you see when you are talking to this wide range of people you're talking? And interestingly, I notice that you are not pitching to tech companies or tech shows, or maybe I missed that, but what I heard, I didn't hear tech at all. So you may want to touch upon that, why it is or if it is not so. But what do you see are the, I mean, even if you take in a very narrow manner, what are the challenges in 2025 for exhibitors? And what do you think potentially they can do about it?
Yeah, okay. Tough question. Thanks for asking them. Makes me push my boundaries further. So, see, for one, I think the couple of years of COVID kind of reset a lot of muscles in us.
Yeah.
Okay. And getting back to being comfortable having human interactions is a very unspoken, high first order challenge for a lot of people, because ultimately you make good the event if the people there can actually hold their own with some stranger multiple times, like 35 times in a day, right? So I think there's that human element that's very important to kind of improve and build that muscle around. That's one. The second is the whole mindset shift towards think of the event as a process. Okay, let's kind of look at a contrasting example, right? Let's say Google Ads is a channel for you, acquisition channel. You want to make a change, you make a change today. Tomorrow you see the result, you make a change tomorrow. It works at a frequency of a day for you. An event is like 45 days before, 4 days at the show, 30 days after. So the cycle time is so long that you have to prepare your mind to kind of play in that cycle time. You live in a day and age with all the overload of information that you want instant gratification. That doesn't come. Okay. Nothing in enterprise is instant.
Yeah.
Right. Except maybe the messages. Okay. So that's a second big switch that companies have to make. Right. There was somebody who messaged me last week and said, hey, I'm going for this event. What should I do? I said, when did you decide you want to go? He said, this morning. And the event started like during the week. I said, there's actually nothing much that you can do except go and wing it and, you know, take some small pleasure that somebody found it cute. Okay. Because you're talking, this is serious effort. It's serious money. Even if you don't realize it, your company is spending serious money on it, right? Like, for example, ProMat just took place in Chicago, okay? I was at ModX in Atlanta last year, and they were saying, there was this one exhibitor I was talking to, and they said, next year for ProMat, we had to confirm, ModX and ProMat are like cousins, right? They're done the same industry body. Next year in Chicago for ProMat, we had to confirm the booth and our desired booth with the location before this event ends, and we had to pay like 50% upfront this month, this year or something. And your booth is like $200,000. So you're locking up $100,000 for a year Okay, and you're going to cough up another 100,000 in January in prep for March, right? Mm-hmm. So these are non-trivial investments, which means you plan, you kind of have a clear story. It's almost like, you know, you probably have heard this quote by Steven Spielberg. Okay. I heard it in one of the quiz shows. You know, he once apparently said 99% of the movie is done. Now all we have to do is go and shoot it. Right?
Yeah.
And that quote has stayed with me like several years. It's incredible the amount of prep that you do. It's almost like the big fat Indian wedding.
Yeah.
Right? You prepare for months in advance and then in 4 days you blow up all the money and go back.
Yeah.
The problem is the aftermath of the wedding is the real life.
Yeah.
So how much ever you prepare, how much ever is the blockbuster on the day, having the mindset to kind of pursue after that becomes like a big thing. The third thing is we are all familiar with the CESs and the MWCs of the world. Okay, that's all great. But given your company size, scale, and ambitions, are you sure which are the events you want to go to? Are these really the right events for you? Okay. Hmm. I have a you know, theory that I've tried to use at a few different places. Hmm. The product of glamour quotient and money quotient in an event is constant. So greater the glamour quotient, less is the money quotient. Okay, so if you're an exhibitor, if I'm talking to you and you're saying I need to invest in like 5 events this year, I'm happy to sit with you, brainstorm, look at, like we built a catalog of like some 1300 events and shows this year, right? I'm happy to sit with you and go through that and say, look, here are the events with estimated attendee size. And they are not in the Venetian or in the, Javits Center in New York or one of those swanky places. Mm. But it's happening somewhere in Raleigh, North Carolina, or it's happening somewhere in Phoenix, Arizona. Okay. It's going to have about 250 exhibitors and about 2,000 footfalls, right? It's a much more intimate gathering. It's like 2 to 2.5 days of, you know, you can assume that more serious people are coming in that place. So pick 3-4 of those. That's probably where you're going to build your pipeline.
Mm.
Okay. You want to go to the Javits and the Venetian, go for one of them. That's probably where you want to go and brand and increase your awareness. Mm. Take a nondescript location beside a very big brand and do something quirky and drive traffic to that brand. Yeah. Everybody in the brand hears about you.
Yeah.
Right? You do nifty things. Like I was talking to this company and they said, we always take a booth beside Amazon because when people are turning around, walking the aisle and turning around, they come to us and then they go to Amazon. So we catch them and send them to Amazon. So when they go to Amazon, they're walking with my branding, my swag.
Mm.
Okay. So people do like all of these creative stuff, right? But if your clear pipeline is important for you, then the choice of events that you want to go to, because then you can, these are smaller events, smaller risk, greater value, greater opportunity to experiment and learn, get your people into the right mindset. You can follow through on them well, right? Yeah. Because Chris Torrens always says, when you're in the event bubble, everything is hunky-dory. When you go back to normal real life, you know, things hit you hard.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right, so I think those are some of the, of course, there are plenty of other challenges we can go on and on, but these to me seem the key takeaway for, you know, exhibitors, right? The mindset, the prep, and the choice of event.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive buyer qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit tradeshowengage.com. That is tradeshowengage.com.
www.bitubibusinessthriveonhumanconnection.com. I think this is a great point to end our chat today, but I have a feeling that we should do one more, maybe a quarter down the line.
Absolutely.
And talk about what happened, do a little bit of ground sort of report, you know what I mean? From what we have seen over the quarter. Sridhar, thank you so much. I really appreciate your coming on the show and sharing. And I look forward to chatting soon. And maybe we should do the coffee one of these days.
Exactly. I was thinking, an in-person follow through Ground Zero report will be a, a wonderful one. Yeah. But really enjoyed the chat, Shubhanjan. Lovely questioning. Thank you for putting me on the hot seat.
Thank you. We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics, and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.